Today's edition of the Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Call It podcast for the 14th day of January. I was just scared the hell out of every guy listening, going, "It's Valentine's Day! Oh, crap!" January 2020, I am Derek Hunter, I am your host, and I am incapable of knowing what day it is, apparently. Oh, lots of stuff to get to, tons of things going on. We've lost another one. We got to pour one out for Cory Booker. First of all, we got to tell people that Cory Booker was still running for president. Then we have to break the news to them that he's no longer running for president. Not all heroes wear capes, ladies and gentlemen. And Cory Booker is one of those people. He'll be missed by somebody, probably. Anyway, we've got that. We've got a big Democratic debate tonight, and that's why Cory Booker dropped out yesterday. He wasn't going to make the debate stage. It just wasn't. And next is going to be, sadly, I think we're going to lose Andrew Yang. But we'll get into that. We got a lot of stuff to get to. Like I said, the Oscar nominations look like a snowstorm. Oh, Oscar's so white. The left is so upset. And Oscar's so urinal friendly when it comes to the director category. Yes, when one for those who pee standing up. The things that people get upset about. If everybody just got hobbies, life would be so much better. It doesn't have to be an expensive hobby. You don't have to collect art or anything like that. But if you just knitted, crocheted, needle-pointed, painted, wrote, whatever you did, the world would be so much better because people wouldn't have time to obsess about this crap. But they do because their lives are miserable. And they look around and say, why isn't that person's life miserable? I must set out to ruin it. And they do. So I guess, although they're putting to test the idea that misery loves company, because they've got company, they just aren't happy still. They're just miserable people. Anyway, we'll get to all of that and more as the show goes on. But first, a nice hat tip to our lovely, lovely, awesome sponsor you heard right there at the top, Life Change Tea. I drink Life Change Tea. There's about a quarter of a gallon of it left up in my refrigerator right now. You brew up a gallon of it, you drink a cup of it every day, and it helps clean you out, if you know what I mean. Wink, wink, nod, nod, or nudge, nudge, whatever. That's before my time. But it's great stuff. It helps you absorb the nutrition in the food that you eat. Right now, there's a whole bunch of stuff in you blocking your ability to absorb the nutrition in the food that you drink. And guess what? Well, that means your food passes right through you. You get less energy. You have less gumption. You feel worse. You feel like you're dragging by the middle of the day. That's where Life Change Tea comes in. They squeegee you out, if you will, if you'll forgive the gross analogy. And suddenly, your body is able to absorb more of the food. There's more surface area ready to absorb nutrition from your food. Then you'll get everything you need to get from your food. You'll see your energy increase, your focus increase, all the things you want out of food, aside from taste. Can't help you there. That's up to you. But once it gets in you, Life Change Tea can hook you up. Check it out. Go to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com, all one word. Enter promo code Derek at checkout, and boom, you get great discounts. You can't beat this deal. They've been with us for 6 months now, which tells me, and they tell me, that you guys are using their products. So I appreciate that. Those of you who know are already in. Those of you who aren't in, you just don't know yet. You got to give it a shot. Go to getthetea.com and a promo code Derek at checkout, and boom, you're on your way. All right. Cory Booker. Let's start with Cory Booker. He was, the thing that's different about Cory Booker is some of the other people who exited the race entered the race with a lot of promise, a lot of buzz around them. You know, I'm thinking mostly of Kamala Harris and Beto O'Rourke. They were touted by the media. They were cheered by the media. Hell, I'm pretty sure that Beto O'Rourke was propositioned by some people in the media, the way that they talked about that guy. And he just, Napoleon Dynamite and Butthead had a kid, and that is Beto O'Rourke. Well, Cory Booker didn't have that. Cory Booker was a perpetual also-ran. Why? Is it because he's black? Well, it'd be really easy to say that because the racists on the left just don't want a black man to get ahead, but that's not it, if we're being honest. Cory Booker is an uninspiring person. He seems perfectly cheerful all the time. And to some people, that can be kind of annoying, but he seems like an affable guy. He's not an inspirational guy. Beto O'Rourke was never an inspirational guy. Beto built up his sort of hype, if you will, from the media, because he'd come close to Ted Cruz in Texas in 2018. Not really all that close, but close, certainly closer than Democrats have in the past in winning statewide in Texas in some time. But most people hadn't seen Beto. They'd only heard about Beto. And the coverage of Beto, even when he was running in Texas, was, oh my God, this guy is the real deal. He's the next Bobby Kennedy. I think it was Vanity Fair that put him on the cover of their magazine, with him dressed up next to a pickup truck, dressed up like he's all, you know, just rural kind of chopping wood kind of guy. He's never chopped wood. But he was out there on a dirt road looking all rough and gruff. And that, I think, was the first impression that most people got of Beto O'Rourke outside of Texas and very tight-knit Democratic circles. So you see, you hear about Beto and you hear Kennedy-esque. And then you see the photo shoots and you think, wow, look at that hair. That's some great hair. That is John F. Kennedy style hair, pre-Dallas. You know, after Dallas, you didn't want his hair. But he had great hair, and that was all you heard about, how wonderful he was. And then you watched him. And when he spoke, he was having convulsions, and you didn't know if he was going to swallow his tongue. Was he having a seizure? Do you need to go in there and make sure that he's okay? Is there a strobe light in the house? What happened? What set him off? And you thought, what in the hell were all these people hyped about? Beto O'Rourke was a great concept for Democrats. But that's all he was a great concept, because in execution, he was terrible. In the case of Kamala Harris, she was hyped because she was a twofer. While Beto was a rich white guy, Kamala Harris was a black woman, a strong black woman from California. So you got the female box checked and the black box checked, and that was enough to send the media over the moon. You know, because the box that was unchecked was accomplishments. But that doesn't really matter. If you can check enough identity politics boxes, you're set. You're good. You're gold with the left. So Kamala Harris came out of the box strong. They gave her a bunch of softball interviews, and she did well in them because she didn't really say anything and nobody pressed her on it. Nobody was paying attention. Then people started paying attention, and they suddenly realized something about Kamala Harris that is frowned upon in Democratic circles. She worked in law enforcement. She was a prosecutor and an attorney general. She put people in prison. Now, she didn't pick people off the streets and put them in prison. She put people in prison who'd committed crimes for the most part. She did a lot of shady dealings that came out later, but that's irrelevant. The mere fact that didn't hurt her with the Democratic base. What hurt her with the Democratic base was the fact that she was in law enforcement at all, that she would put anybody in jail at all, regardless of what they were accused of. That's a no-no. And it's really shocking to talk about how far the Democratic Party has gone to the left. It's nuts. We don't want anybody who's ever put anybody in prison at all, ever. Used to be people entered politics a lot of times from a prosecutor's role. They'd be, you know, they'd have a high-profile case. They'd get a lot of media attention. They'd go out there and they'd put some evil SOB in prison or whatever, get a conviction, and become famous off of that. Rudy Giuliani kind of did that. He was, worked in the Southern District of New York. He brought down the Gotti family and all of that. And then he parlayed that into a political career. That was common in both parties at one point, not that long ago, in this country. Now, in the Democratic Party, if you served in law enforcement, forget it. Man, if you ever wrote a parking ticket for anybody, why, you're just a freaking Nazi. And Kamala Harris was hindered by that. Now, she tried to backtrack. She tried to smooth over some of her more controversial decisions as a prosecutor and as attorney general. She tried to deny certain things. She couldn't do it. She really, with her problem, see, I'm of the belief that the Democrats have definitely moved to the left. But think of it as a smearing peanut butter, or a skid mark might be more appropriate. A skid mark just depends on whether or not it's a slamming on the brakes skid mark or a stepping on the gas skid mark. But it's a skid mark, and the Democratic Party is being spread out further to the left. The people who were in the middle, the average blue collar, union guy, auto worker, they're still Democrats, mostly because I think they don't really pay that much attention. They don't notice what their party is doing. And they've always been Democrats. They're good union guys, and the union tells them Democrat, 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 so they vote Democrat. My dad is friends with a lot of people like this. Up in northern Michigan, a whole bunch of retired auto workers vote Democrat because Democrats are for the poor little guy. Democrats are for the poor. None of that is true anymore. But that doesn't stop people from believing it because they believed it their whole lives. They've been told it their whole lives. They vote Democrat because their parents voted Democrat. Their grandparents voted Democrat. We're a Democratic household. Maybe they're Catholic. In 1960, they put up a picture of JFK in their house and just never got over it. Whatever the issue is, that party does not exist anymore. The party does not exist in that way anymore. Now they are obsessed with what bathroom anybody can use, making sure that people use the right kind of pronouns, all the things you can obsess about if, you're really out of problems in general and you don't have a hobby. So that's what the Democratic Party is these days. And that Democratic Party doesn't have much of a use for anybody who is, in law enforcement or even was ever in law enforcement. And that was what Kamala Harris ran up against. What is her resume? Her execution is terrible, but her resume was wildly impressive. It would be great to be a politician and go into it with that kind of resume, except for the stuff she did with Willie Brown to get into it in the first place. You probably don't want that on your resume. But still, the rest of it was great. And she got a little bit of traction, like Beto did, in the polls because of all the glowing coverage. And then when they saw her, then they looked at her and they said, no, no. So the wheels came off pretty quickly. But unlike Beto and Kamala, Cory Booker was never in the mix. He was never a top-tier candidate. He's not an inspirational person. He's kind of a boring person, to be perfectly honest with you. Always upbeat, but never interesting. That's what I would say about Cory Booker. Wouldn't look great on a bumper sticker, but he probably would have gotten some points for truth in advertising if he'd have gone that route with his campaign slogan. But yeah, the Spartan, remember, is I Am Spartacus. This is the closest I'll ever get to I Am Spartacus. Yeah, it is, Corey. You might be good enough for New Jersey, but nobody elsewhere wants you. And so finally, after he didn't make the debate stage in December, and if you're not going to make the debate stage while Andrew Yang and Amy Klobuchar are making the debate stage, maybe it's just not your year. Maybe it's just not going to happen for you. Well, he thought he might be able to make the January debate. He didn't. And so at that point, two debates in a row missing because you're polling too low. He had enough donors. He just didn't have enough supporters. So that's it. I suspect that I like Andrew Yang. By the way, Cory Booker, we'll have a little bit of audio for him in a second. But I like Andrew Yang. He seems like an affable, nice guy. But I think it's not really that big of a deal because there are also like minor candidates that you never heard of still running. But I think he's next. He didn't make the debate stage. He had an impressive fundraising haul, but that's not enough. It's getting the supporters that matters and getting the supporters in the polls in the states that matter. I do think, I mean, it's too close now. Andrew Yang will definitely stick around to Iowa and New Hampshire, but I don't see him sticking around much longer than that. And while everybody else who's run for president in the Democratic Party will be considered as a potential vice presidential nominee, Andrew Yang will not be. You want to talk about bigotry? Andrew Yang will not be. He's the one who's not the politician. He's the businessman. He, if he were, you know, wanting to play that game, he's an Asian fellow. But he's the only one you don't hear any sort of talk whatsoever, any buzz at all about, well, you know what? He would really bring a lot to the ticket. He would actually bring a lot to a Democratic ticket. None of those people really have private sector experience with the exception of Tom Steyer and Michael Bloomberg, neither of whom are going to get the nomination, at least not through the primary process, maybe in a brokered convention where they could buy it. But Andrew Yang is getting no respect. Andrew Yang is... Whatever. I don't really care. They can form the circular firing squad all they want. But we do have a debate tonight, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens because there is some catfighting going on in the Democratic Party. They're not playing nice with one another. Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders are scrambling. See, they're like the opposite of Siths. They're like Highlanders. There can be only one radical progressive out there, even though they're all kind of radical progressives in their own way. It's just a matter of how far into socialism you want to wade. Bernie and Elizabeth are competing over the same ground. Bernie sort of carved it out for himself in 2016 and reclaimed a lot of it this time. Elizabeth Warren is trying to carve out the ground that she's carving out from Bernie's people. She's done a decent job of it, but she's been fading of late because mainly, I think it was her 5 weeks of refusing to say whether or not she was going to raise taxes on the middle class to pay for her healthcare dream. And then when she finally came out with an answer, it was a gobbledygook answer that didn't make any sense and nobody believed because it's not true. She's going to raise taxes on people. So they are in the midst of a little bit of a slap fight right now. And what becomes of it, what happens, is going to determine which one of them will survive. Right now, Bernie Sanders is ahead. He's definitely got the lead on that one. But according to Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders told her two years ago, in 2018, that no woman will ever win the presidency. I kind of love this because it's funny that they are they're having this fit. They always revert back. They're like a turtle. The turtle, the one move is for a turtle is to go back into the shell. The one move for a Democrat is to accuse everybody attacking them of being some kind of isterphobe. Period. That's it. And they even use that against each other now because their muscles have atrophied as far as anything else goes. CNN has the story. The stakes were high when Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren met at Warren's apartment in Washington, D.C. one evening in December 2018. Ooh, scandal. What are they doing? Imagine those two having an affair. Gross. I hope you didn't just eat. The longtime friends knew that they could soon be running against each other for president. You want an illustration of how incestuous Washington and the corridors of power are Just look at that. They're longtime friends. They just both happen to be Northeastern liberals, but it's like there's a secret club, and they've known each other for years. The two agreed that if they ultimately faced each other as presidential candidates, they should remain civil and avoid attacking one another so as to not hurt the progressive movement. For the greater good, comrade. We must do this for the greater good, comrade. They also discussed how best to take on President Donald Trump, and Warren laid out two main reasons she believed she would be a strong candidate. She could make a robust argument about the economy and earn broad support from female voters. Now, why would she, how could she make an argument about the economy? She doesn't seem to understand the fundamentals of the economy and how they work, because she's condemning the current economy and the boom that we are in. Secondly, don't you love the way I have a vagina? Therefore, I shall get the votes of people with vaginas, as if that's all that women need is, you know, hey, you've got a vagina too. I'm going to vote for you. That sadly actually is enough for some women voters. But what are you going to do? Sanders responded that he did not believe a woman could win. There's your needle being ripped off the record moment. The description of that meeting is based on the accounts of four people. Two people Warren spoke with directly soon after the encounter, and two people familiar with the meeting. In other words, nobody was in the room. Again, was there candlelight and wine? What's going on? Why are Bernie and Elizabeth meeting in her pad, you know, in the evening over a glass of wine? Sorry. But you've got this situation with these people who are plotting together to make sure that nobody ever says anything negative about another. After publication of this story, Warren herself backed up this account of the meeting, saying in part in a statement Monday that, quote, I thought a woman could win. He disagreed. Actually, Elizabeth Warren's statement was a little bit more involved than that. Here's the statement that Elizabeth Warren put out, quote, Bernie and I met for more than 2 hours in December 2018 to discuss the 2020 election. Our past work together and our shared goals, beating Donald Trump and taking back our government from the wealthy and well-connected. God, these people are straight out of the Soviet Union. Are building an economy that works for everyone. Among the topics that came up was what happened if Democrats nominated a female candidate. I thought a woman could win. He disagreed. I have no interest in discussing this private meeting any further because Bernie and I have far more in common than our differences on punditry. Don't you love that? I'm just going to throw this bomb right here. And then I'm going to run away. I don't want to talk about it. Don't ask me about it. Here's a bomb. It's going to go off, and I'm leaving. I'll see you guys later. I have no interest in discussing this private meeting further. It's a private meeting that you just picked what helped you the most and then released it to the public. Yeah, all right. I'm in this race to talk about what's broken in our country and how to fix it. And that's what I'm going to continue to do. I know Bernie is in the race for the same reason. We have been friends and allies in this fight for a long time, and I have no doubt we will continue to work together to defeat Donald Trump and put our government on the side of the people. I'm not going to talk about this anymore. It was a private conversation, but he did totally say that sexist thing, and now I'm not going to talk about it anymore. God, it's got to be good to be a Democrat. You just have this little racism or sexism chambered at all times. And the media just takes it as gospel. Is there something that about Bernie Sanders that would make you think that he would have said, well, Elizabeth, I think you're doing great. I love you. We've been friends forever. But there ain't no way no broad's ever going to be elected president. Suddenly he turns into, he goes from Jackie Mason to Frank Sinatra. There's no way. Look, there's lovely here. You got a lovely home. You got a lovely apartment. I love it. It's great for having me. But let's face it. There ain't no broad never, ever going to be elected president. No broad, no stinking broads, nowhere going to ever be president. I just don't believe it. I love seeing it. I'm absolutely ecstatic that they're having this little infighting, but I'm looking at one person dropping in the polls and one person rising in the polls. The person dropping in the polls is the one who suddenly remembers and decides to put out there this private conversation that, nobody can verify. But more importantly, as with most of the arguments that Democrats make, nobody can disprove either. So all the denials from Bernie Sanders, you can't disprove it. And you end up in a situation where it's he said, she said, and you've got to believe all women or something like that. It's just, it's so nice when they get their own rules used against them. I like that part of this. I think it's garbage. I think Elizabeth Warren is desperate. She's slipping in the polls. She's fading back and back even further. And she'd do anything to not, anybody would do almost anything to not have wasted the last, what, a year and a half, really probably 2.5 years in plotting this thing, of their lives plotting to become president of the United States. So of course somebody's willing to throw this garbage out there, see what sticks against the wall. But as far as Bernie, they got a lot of problems with Bernie Sanders. But the idea that he would somehow be this guy in private. Look, there ain't no way, no broad, never. I ain't never going to vote for no broad. You kidding me? They leave the toilet seat down all the time. Is that really going to be something that comes out of Bernie Sanders' mouth? I don't see that happening. There's a lot of crazy stuff coming out of his mouth. And God knows what goes into his mouth. I don't even want to think about that. But the idea that he would sit there and say, look, I don't think a broad could win. Just doesn't seem like anything. But it'll be interesting. That will make the debate tonight worth watching for that exchange, at least, because that's going to be interesting to see. Bernie is not going to come out and say, yeah, I said it. What are you going to do about it? He's going to deny it, as you know, you would expect. Plus, again, Elizabeth Warren is kind of pot committed. She's in the sort of scrambling mode. She's not in steerage, but she was not in first class. So she's got to try and position herself for a lifeboat seat. And it's time is running out. We're a few short weeks away from the Iowa caucuses. So she's got to find some way to differentiate herself from Bernie. And I guess she decided to go this route. Seems crazy to me. Sanders denied it, by the way. What he said to CNN, here's Bernie's statement to CNN in their report, quote, it's ludicrous to believe that at the same meeting where Elizabeth Warren told me she was going to run for president, I would tell her that a woman couldn't win. It's sad that 3 weeks before the Iowa caucuses and a year after that private conversation, staff who weren't in the room are lying about what happened. What I did say that night was that Donald Trump is a sexist, a racist, and a liar who would weaponize whatever he could. Do I believe a woman can win in 2020? Of course. After all, Hillary Clinton beat Donald Trump by 3 million votes in 2016. Then Elizabeth Warren's communication director declined to comment. You know, you throw the bomb out there and you walk away and Elizabeth Warren says, I'm not going to talk about this anymore. Well, let's see how she handles not talking about this anymore on the debate stage tonight. They have to be asked about this. Both of them have to be asked about this. It's going to be fun as hell to watch for that reason only. And then just to see, because by the way, the entire debate stage is going to be white. Last time it was nearly white, but Andrew Yang was up there. Andrew Yang did not qualify, so there are only going to be 6 people up on the debate stage. The people who did qualify are Biden, Sanders, Buttigieg, Warren, God, who else? Klobuchar and Tom Steyer, the billionaire Tom Steyer. It's kind of funny because the guy who's spending the most money and getting a lot of ink is Michael Bloomberg, and he's not getting anywhere near a debate stage. He is not getting anywhere near anything in the polls, yet he gets a lot of coverage. He gets a lot of attention for a guy who entered late, isn't playing in the early states, is just seeming to position himself for a possible brokered convention where he could come in and buy his way onto the ballot. If I were running for president, I'd be pissed off that all the attention that he's getting when he shouldn't be getting it. But hey, what do I know? I like to see them fight. I'm glad to watch them fight, and I will watch as they do fight tonight. And I'll watch so you don't have to. In other news, and this news is about the news, and it's the least surprising media story in a long time. I know a bunch of people who work at Fox. And I have texted all of them over the past year that I thought it was really weird that Fox News would allow Shepard Smith to audition for an MSNBC show on their air. They all privately agreed. I'm not going to betray who they are, but they all privately agreed that he really does not. He's not an anchor. He's not a newsman. He's an angry liberal. He's become that. Once Roger Ailes left Fox, he no longer had the reins on him to steer him because his show was supposed to be straight news, and it was anything but news. Now, Daily Beast reports that Shepard Smith might be going actually over to MSNBC. I was mostly joking, although not completely. Now they say MSNBC talent and staffers are bracing for a major 2020 shakeup amid discussions of moving ratings challenge Chuck Todd to a morning slot and execs talking with Fox News escapee Shepard Smith. Yes, he escaped. He managed to, can I get out of my contract? Yes, please go. That was the extent of the escape that Shepard Smith made. Do you mind if I get out of my car? No, no, please. Thank God. I mean, you'll be missed. Go ahead. See you later. The goal of any reshuffle would be to shed ratings dead weight in the lead up to the election. Sources at the network cautioned that the new look for the lineup is still up in the air, but brass have been batting around several options. One of those is new blood in the form of Smith, who abruptly quit Fox late last year after on-air skirmishes with Tucker Carlson and other primetime hosts. He threw a hissy fit, they responded, and he took his ball and went home. Smith has been in conversations with MSNBC president Phil Griffin about a potential gig when his non-compete clause expired, although his price tag is expected to be considerable for any interested network. You don't have a job, dude. You had ratings because you were on Fox. What kind of thing can they possibly, what kind of demands could he say? When I was at Fox, I was pulling in 2 to 3 million viewers a day. Yeah, so was the test pattern. I think a large part of Fox's ratings are people who just leave their TVs on all day and not really sit there and pay attention to it. And like right now, in the other room, there's a TV. The TV is turned off, but the cable box is on. And the cable box is probably on Fox because that was likely the last thing I had on before I turned the TV off. That counts as ratings. I don't think that anybody goes, ooh, is it 3 o'clock? It's time for Shepard Smith. I must get to a TV. I have to know what Shepard Smith is going to report on. That person doesn't exist. Quote, it's unclear what slot he would take, but not going to take the bait there. Not going to make the joke. It's unclear what slot he would take, but we'd want him in prime time, an MSNBC insider told the Daily Beast. We are well aware Jeff Zucker, president of CNN, is pursuing him, as are a number of the networks. Really? Really? I mean, who has had success once they've left Fox? Think about that. Is there anybody who, maybe there is, but is there somebody that I'm unaware of who left Fox and became a success? They took the numbers that they'd accrued, the audience that they'd built at Fox News, and when they left and went somewhere else, those numbers followed them. Anywhere? I mean, has anybody done, the only person that leaps to mind who's done that, has actually left and gone to another network, is Greta Van Susteren. And Greta's show on MSNBC lasted maybe 6 months, So I'm not really sure that there's a whole bunch of Shepard Smith fans out there yearning, missing Shepard Smith. Like, oh, if only I could get the take from Shepard Smith out there. I just don't see it. But then again, these people want to write, you know, $10 million checks a year to somebody. Who cares? At 30 Rock, much of the tinkering is currently focused on the daytime schedule. With the lackluster performance of Todd's Meet the Press Daily at 5 p.m., a hammock, as one insider put it, between the robust ratings of Nicole Wallace's 4 p.m. show and Ari Melber's 6 p.m. show, there's been talk of switching Todd to 9 a.m., as Page 6 first reported. Now, I love that. Chuck Todd, ratings failure. The problem is Chuck Todd. Even the liberals who he's preaching to, who agree with him and his spin and his lies, are like, I can't trust this guy. I don't care for this guy at all. I love that they refer to him as a hammock. Under that scenario, the current 9 a.m. anchor Stephanie Ruhle would move to 3 p.m., where her financial expertise would mesh well with the market closings. She's a moron. She is the dumbest person in cable news. If they want to put her on, then good. Let her do it. I just don't understand why anybody thinks that Stephanie Ruhle brings something to the table. She's dumb. She's incredibly dumb. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. However, Todd is said to be resisting such a move. He doesn't want to get up early. He's already up early on Sundays. He doesn't want to get up early on weekdays. He's counting money with his rich Democrat consultant wife that they're raking in from all the Democratic campaigns. He doesn't want to get up early. You kidding me? Several sources inside NBC News cited the perception that his new slot would hurt him with an even bigger dip for any program that airs after the successful Morning Joe franchise. Others said that some of the show's staffers were less than thrilled by the scheduling demands of an earlier time slot. One source told the Daily Beast that NBC News and MSNBC chairman Andy Lack recently traveled to D.C. to meet with the Meet the Press staff to discuss the team's weekend show and various other projects, including the show's podcast and a possible role on NBC's forthcoming streaming platform. In other words, Chuck Todd is wildly unpopular with audiences, and they're desperately scrambling to try to make him a success, which is funny because he's kind of the face of NBC News right now. Well, yeah, you got Lester Holt as the anchor, but in reality, Chuck Todd is Mr. NBC News. Other names like the 2 p.m. host Katie Turd have also been floated for the 3 p.m. slot, which will be vacated when anchor Ali Velshi moves into a new weekend role. New weekend. I love how they say, oh, he's moving into a new weekend role. Like that's a big promotion or something like that. MSNBC recruited Joshua Johnson from NPR late last year for an anchor role. He's expected to eventually join the weekday lineup as well. Isn't it weird how these liberal networks manage to pull together people from NPR and make them stars, fit them right into a progressive thing? On the weekends, changes are expected to schedule prior to Joy Reid's 10 a.m. show. They're going to keep that pile of garbage. Will they keep Al Sharpton? That's the question everybody wants to know. They're not going to fire Al Sharpton. They'll keep giving him a check, because the alternative would be to have him calling them a bunch of racists. And they don't want that. Look, they understand how Sharpton's racket works. He's made millions of dollars with that racket. They're well aware of it. You don't sign Al Sharpton blindly. Let's do an update on some Trump derangement syndrome thing that is going on now, because it's spread. It was just originally Maggie Haberman at the New York Times being incredibly stupid on Twitter, but now we're seeing this again from Fredo Cuomo. It's amazing how this sort of thought ends up spreading around the country. The other day, 2 days ago, on the 12th, the president tweeted to Iran, and it's a very good message, quote, "To the leaders of Iran, do not kill your protesters. Thousands have already been killed or imprisoned by you, and the world is watching. More importantly, the USA is watching. Turn your internet back on and let reporters roam free. Stop killing your great Iranian people." Now, who could disagree with that? Who could have a gripe with that? Is there something controversial in there? No, there isn't. But it was tweeted by Donald Trump. So that just triggers the left. That's Pavlovian. They can't control themselves. Maggie Haberman, New York Times, responds writing, "Let reporters roam free," says the president, who routinely refers to the U.S. press as the enemy of the people to Iranian leaders. Maggie, there's a huge, I don't understand why these people can't make it's everything is about them. It's narcissism squared. These people really are either insecure or arrogant, or a combination of the two. But the idea that this United States, that President Trump is saying, oh my God, he's saying something nice about the press, but he calls the press here in the U.S. the enemy of the people. He calls fake news the enemy of the people. So they always leave that part out. It's very weird. He talks about the fake press, the fake news, as enemy of the people. You would think any journalist who considers themselves a serious truth teller would understand and agree with that, because the fakes, the frauds, and the corrupt hacks who with press credentials make their entire profession look bad. You would think they would want to, you know, protect their own credibility, but they don't have any credibility because they're all leftists. They're all on the same team. But the idea to equate the Iranian government, which does jail and execute journalists, with Donald Trump tweeting mean things about the press. Oh, he says we're the enemy of the people. Has he rounded you up? Has he ordered you shot? Has he ordered you to be imprisoned? Has anybody been disappeared here in the United States as a result of Donald Trump's orders about the media? No, they have not. But Maggie Haberman wants to equate the two. It's kind of funny because Maggie Haberman and the rest of her profession were kind of quiet when Barack Obama actually did jail journalists, when he actually did spy on them. The criticism and the reporting on those things was muted at best. They did it, and they quickly moved on. They reported on it, and they quickly moved on. They didn't want to dwell on it. But Donald Trump tweets something. Donald Trump has done nothing to the press. Absolutely nothing to hinder a free press or hinder reporting on him whatsoever. Yet you would think he was Barack Obama, and you would think Barack Obama had Donald Trump's record on the press. See, these people don't seem to understand. Donald Trump probably is annoyed every once in a while by the stories that are lies about him. But I think the overriding theme for Donald Trump is that he loves that they're reporting on him. I think that is really the overriding thing. I made the papers. I'm number one in the papers. I'm driving the news cycle. I'm down with this. I'm cool with this. I think it's great. Yeah, there are lies. That just gives me reason to go to Twitter and throw more bombs at these people. That's what Donald Trump does. I think he enjoys that quite a bit. There have been very few stories, I suspect, that have really, really bothered him. Some may have angered him, but I think he also really thrives on the back and forth. Yet Barack Obama did imprison journalists, did spy on journalists. The 20 Associated Press reporters, James Rosen, when he was at Fox News, they wanted to know his sources, so they tapped his phones and they read his parents' email and all that sort of stuff that everybody in the media thinks we've all forgotten about, so that when they send out, well, this is how dare the president tell the Iranians to let the press be free and not imprison them when he's tweeting mean things about them. Now, it'd be bad enough if it were just Maggie Haberman one time. Of course, this is a constant refrain amongst the leftist media. But last night, Chris Cuomo, or yesterday morning, I guess, Chris Cuomo responded to the president's tweet again saying, don't kill your protesters, Iran, and let reporters roam free so they can report to the world what's going on. Turn your internet back on. Chris Cuomo responded to that by saying, quote, right message, but is this POTUS the right messenger regarding respect for critics and a free press? Now, Chris might not remember the Obama years. I'm not sure he has much retention of anything. He doesn't seem all that bright, and shiny objects tend to distract him quite a bit. I hear that his staff keeps him occupied and prevents him from running off the set during commercial breaks by pointing a laser pointer at his desk that he chases around, and then they put him back in his chair when it's time to come back from commercial break. But that's just an unfounded rumor. I don't know that I believe it, although I could totally believe it. But you got to love these people. They are oblivious to the world around them. They're oblivious to the events of their lives. And this isn't, you know, an event from their childhood. When they were 3 years old, this happened. And how could you not possibly remember that? This is from just a few years ago. These are events that they covered. And they're unaware of them, or they're acting as though their audience is unaware of them. So either they're stupid and don't remember, or they think their audience is stupid, which is a testament to how bad they are as journalists. Theoretically, they would have covered these things, right? So if you tell your audience these things, why do you act then as if your audience doesn't know about it? It's kind of disrespectful. It's kind of telling your audience, I think you're stupid. You're probably too dumb to remember this. So I'm just going to go ahead and tell you. But this is journalism in 2020. Ladies and gentlemen, journalism in 2019. It was journalism in 2020. It's been journalism for a long time. It is dead. It is long since dead. It died of autoerotic asphyxiation, if you want to be technical, but the family is embarrassed to get that fact out there. Yeah, the national championship game last night was last night, by the way, and LSU won. You know, it was, you know, just a quick aside about football. The football games last weekend sucked. The last one, I suppose, was okay. It was close. But for the most part, they've been blowouts and boring blowouts. Blowouts in playoff games are boring. And blowouts in regular season games can be exciting if you care about one of the teams. But blowouts in playoff games, when you don't care about either of the teams, gets really boring really fast. These are supposed to be the best teams. They're supposed to be evenly matched. And it just doesn't work out that way. So hopefully this weekend's playoffs will be better. I'll also re-up here my firm belief that Super Bowl games should be moved to Saturday and the last playoff games should be moved to Saturday. Just from a practical standpoint, there are people out there encouraging. There's always this movement every year when the Super Bowl comes up. Oh, we've got to make the Monday after the Super Bowl a holiday. Well, we don't need another holiday. We just need the NFL to get smart and go, you know what? This would play great on a Saturday. All the people that get together and have beers and have Super Bowl parties and everything, most people leave by the second half because they've got to work the next day. Most people are responsible. They don't need a day off. They'd love it, sure, but the government is never going to give them a day off. So you move it to Saturday, and your beer sponsors and your chip sponsors and the wings and all the people that sell all the stuff that everybody eats at Super Bowl parties would sell a lot more of that crap because people would stay until the end of the game. They'd, you know, stay till hours after the end of the game. Hell, I'd go to a Super Bowl party on a Saturday. I go to Super Bowl parties on Sundays, and I'd literally leave at halftime because, A, I don't care. I mostly watch for the commercials, but because the game's oftentimes boring. But I look at it and I just go, I've got to work tomorrow. I'm not going to stay up and watch all this crap and pay super close attention to it. I've got to drive home. Most times, most years, I pass on Super Bowl parties just because I don't want to go to them because I do have to work the next day. You put that game on a Saturday, I'm out there. I'm going till 2 o'clock in the morning. I don't care. I'm going to stay there and have a good time. I might have a few more adult beverages than would be recommended by any doctor. But that's just me. And I think that's a very simple fix. They aren't up against anything. It's not like the regular season, they don't want to have their games on Saturday because of college football. But college football is long since over. I also think college football suffered, to go off on another tangent. They had this like 2 or 3 weeks between the playoff games and the championship game. I forgot that this game was even on last night because it had been so long that it was like, oh yeah, I guess that's on, huh? So congratulations to them. NFL, if you're listening, people need their Saturdays to be filled with the Super Bowl and even the last round of the playoffs. Saturday's just sitting there. It's a much better day for your sponsors. Your sponsors should demand it. Let's get this thing done for next year. Super Bowl 55, let's make it Super Bowl Saturday, huh? In entertainment news, this is a predictable story. The woke left, as we've seen with Democrats fighting each other, they always go after themselves eventually. They go after each other. They go after us. They go after innocent people minding their own business. And eventually they go after themselves as well. And there's nothing as liberal as Hollywood, even though, by the way, at the national championship game, Vince Vaughn was caught in the presidential box talking to Donald Trump. A guy named Timothy Burke, who is part of the Writers Guild of America and has written for The Daily Beast and Deadspin, tweeted out a video of Donald Trump and Vince Vaughn and Melania Trump having a conversation up in the suite there. And he says, "I'm very sorry to have to share this video with you. All of it, every part of it." And there he is. He's very upset that he spotted, he must have been a Vince Vaughn fan. There's no way he's a Vince Vaughn fan after this. And he sees that they shook hands and they parted well, and Vince Vaughn waved at everybody and everything. And it's like, oh my God, Vince Vaughn talked to the president of the United States. Now there's going to be cancel Vince Vaughn. We must cancel Vince Vaughn. By the way, if you're unfamiliar with Vince Vaughn, you should see some of his movies. Swingers is awesome. That was the first one. But I've seen Wedding Crashers and things like that, old school. He's a libertarian. He's a kind of a libertarian conservative guy, a big supporter of the Second Amendment. So it's not really that big of a surprise, but to every millennial, everything that they see is the first time anybody's seen it. It never occurs to them. Google doesn't exist in their world, apparently. They just go, oh my God, Vince Vaughn is talking to Donald Trump and he's not vomiting uncontrollably on him or trying to choke him out. He must be some sort of evil right winger. Like, I loved that guy and now I can't love that guy anymore. Well, he's been the kind of conservative guy forever. You just haven't been paying attention because you're stupid and you're self-absorbed and you assume that everybody agrees with you, and not everybody agrees with you. Adults make up their own minds. Millennials, I guess they're technically adults. Millennials don't make up their own minds. They make up the minds of other people. Their minds are made up for them. The Oscar nominations came out yesterday, and I'm a big, big movie fan. You listen to the show, I drop movie references all the time. I don't know why. Most of my knowledge of the world comes through watching movies. Not really, but I do watch a lot of movies. I love movies, and I always get excited for the award. They're always crap, but I was like, okay, this could be interesting. I want to see who they're going to nominate, because there was controversy and complaints at the Golden Globes that there were far too many white people nominated. It's unheard of. It's unseemly. And that criticism extended into the Oscars as well. The Best Picture nominees are Ford versus Ferrari, which I would kind of like to see, although I'll just wait to see it when it comes out on home video. It's pretty soon, I think, going to be available on iTunes. I watched a documentary by Adam Carolla called The 24-Hour War, basically about Ford and Ferrari and the 24-Hour Le Mans race, and it was excellent, so I suspect the movie will be great. The next nominee is The Irishman, which I thought was... I guess I haven't watched it all the way through. That's a commitment. That's 3.5 hours long, man. I've watched it 3 times, technically. I've started it and then fallen asleep. Not a crack on the movie, although it is a very long movie. It's more of a crack on me for starting to watch it at like 11 o'clock at night over Thanksgiving when everybody else had gone to bed. I'm like, oh, I'll watch The Irishman. And I lay down on the couch and I got like 1.5 hours in and I was out. So I tried it again the next night and I did the same thing. The problem is there are no chapters on Netflix. So if you're watching it and you go, I'm going to go to bed, I'm going to stop it here and I'll pick up tomorrow where I left off, you can do that because Netflix, like iTunes and everything, will give you the option if you want to resume playing where you left off. If you fall asleep during it and it plays all the way through, you don't get that option. So you sit there and you have to fast forward through and try and figure out where the hell you were, what the last thing you remember was. And after doing that 3 times, I kind of gave up. At some point, I'll have either 3.5 hours to watch. I can't imagine that happening with kids, but I'll probably watch it in hour increments and get back to it because I do want to see it. Jojo Rabbit is the next one. That's the weird sort of Nazi movie. I don't know much about that, although I heard very good things. Then there's Joker, which I thought I saw in the theater. I forget, who did I go to that in the theater with? I don't remember. But I thought it was okay. I thought it was just, I might have gone to see it by myself. Occasionally I go to see movies by myself. Went and saw the new Star Wars movie by myself because I went to the midnight show. And everybody else was abed and was like, now's my chance. And the theater was empty. But Joker's good. It's not great. It was fine. You watch that and the gritty, grimy world that they create is very realistic, but also not realistic in the grand scheme. Like, I can't imagine there's a clown guild out there for people twirling signs and stuff like that. It was just, it was fine. It was okay. I didn't think it was great. Little Women, which is about, what, the 15th different adaption of that. Did the world really need another adaption of that? Marriage Story, which is on Netflix, which I haven't watched because it just doesn't really interest me. I could watch real life people probably if I go to the mall yell at each other. I don't need to watch two actors yell at each other for 1.5 hours. 1917, the World War One drama, which actually does look interesting. It's gotten good reviews and it was the number one movie last weekend. I would go see that, but I probably won't. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the wife and I did go see that one. And again, it's good. It's good. I don't really care for the I'm rewriting history movies that Quentin Tarantino does. I find it a little like in, was it Inglourious Bastards where he killed Hitler, blew him up or set him on fire, shot him or whatever the hell he did in that movie theater in Paris. That seems disrespectful to the victims of Hitler. I get it, and I don't say he shouldn't have done it. He can do whatever the hell he wants. I'm all for freedom. But the Tate LoBianco murders did happen, right? Sharon Tate is dead. And spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, it is a world, it's a story leading up to the murder of Sharon Tate that stops. It stops it. And then I find just a little, I don't know, if you're a relative of Sharon Tate's and you see this, I think it'd be a little tacky. I think it'd be a little gross. It'd make you a little uncomfortable. And the reality's bad enough. And then Parasite, which is a South Korean movie that everybody is raving about. I have not seen, but I probably will check out. So those were the movie nominations, and they're all white except for Parasite, which is South Korean. Then the Best Supporting Actor, Tom Hanks, Anthony Hopkins, Al Pacino, Joe Pesci, and Brad Pitt. A whole bunch of white guys. Not one of them is off-white, nor do they identify as anything. There's no trans women nominated at all. So that's an outrage. By the way, I haven't seen that A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood with Tom Hanks. People were surprised to find out that he's a supporting actor and the movie wasn't about him. It's actually about the journalist who's doing a profile of Mr. Rogers. So the role is much smaller than people think, which is probably why I don't think it did all that well. But personally, I didn't grow up on Mr. Rogers. I don't understand the appeal of Mr. Rogers. He seems like a perfectly nice guy and fine and all of that, and I'm sure he was a great person, but he's just, it's kind of creepy, to be honest with you. His voice is just turns me off, so I've never been a fan of Mr. Rogers. Best Supporting Actress, Kathy Bates, Laura Dern, Scarlett Johansson, Florence Pugh, and Margot Robbie. Again, a veritable snowstorm. All of these women identify as women as well as are biological women. It's an outrage. Where is the diversity? Then you've got the best actor. Oh, it's somebody off-white. Antonio Banderas for Pain and Glory, which I don't think I've ever heard of. And then Leonardo DiCaprio, Adam Driver, Joaquin Phoenix, and Jonathan Pryce. White, 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 and whiter. Then the best actress, Scarlett Johansson, nominated again. Best Actress and Best Supporting Actress, which never really bodes well for the people who are nominated in two categories, because half the people go, well, I'll vote for him in this category, and the other half go, I'll vote for him in that category, but I don't want to vote for him in both categories, and then they end up winning in neither category. Saoirse Ronan from Little Women, Charlize Theron, Renee Zellweger for Judy, and then Cynthia Erivo for Harriet. There is your nominee of official color. She is a black woman. She played Harriet Tubman in the movie Harriet. So the Knives came out. Oh, by the way, the Best Director nominees, all dudes who identify as dudes, all biological males with penises who are white except for one of them. Bong Joon-ho, who directed Parasite, is Korean, and as we know from the Harvard lawsuit about affirmative action, Asian doesn't count as minority anymore. So it's basically five white people. Todd Phillips, who directed Old School, by the way, who did Joker, Sam Mendes, who directed 1917, Martin Scorsese for The Irishman, and Quentin Tarantino for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and as if on cue, as if to be a stereotype of themselves, the liberal elites out there in the world started immediately complaining that there were far too many white people nominated. Where were the nominees of color? Why didn't they nominate people of color? Why didn't they nominate female directors? And the question you have to ask these lunatics as they spew their insanity and their bile is a couplefold. A, what would you nominate? What was stiffed? What was not given a nod? And which one of these nominees would you bump off the list? So I think everybody agrees that, at least, you know, from a critical standpoint, these are good movies. These are some of the best movies of last year. So in order to nominate the checkbox that you want, the people with that check the certain boxes in identity politics, you have to pick somebody here who goes off the list, who goes off the list, who gets shafted to fit your quota system. And there is no answer. The answer last time when Oscar So White trended 2 years ago was, we've changed the Academy rules. We will now have more minority members. We will do this. We will do that. We will do everything. We'll get younger members. We'll come. We will find a way to diversify our nominees, when really it's supposed to be about who is the best. You're not allowed to be the best anymore if you're white. So they changed all the rules. They opened up the thing. They celebrated themselves for being so woke last year. And then this year, again, it's a whole bunch of white people. So the question is not why are they racist in nominating these people. The question would really be is why don't studios make better movies starring black people? Why not that question? Why don't black directors make better movies? Why don't black actors make better movies? Denzel Washington's in a movie. I'm going to see it. He's going to make a good movie, and he's going to be amazing in it. But everybody else, anybody else leap to mind that you sit there and you go, oh yeah, I got to go see that movie? No. Maybe some people will develop into that kind of talent. But realistically, the problem isn't with the people judging all of the product that was put out this year. It lies with the people making the product this year. They're making crap movies. Think about those movies that have been released this year. Sir, what, Hustlers? Oh, Hustlers, about a bunch of strippers who go and rip off a bunch of people because they're evil or whatever the hell it is. Is that really a good movie? Is that something you say, well, that's right up there with, what is one of these stupid movies? Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's right up there with Joker. It is one of those wonderful movies that everybody must see. I doubt it. It's not with the people who judge. It's with the people who produce. Produce better, you get better results. It's weird how that works, isn't it? But I love that they're eating each other. They can have each other. They can devour each other for all I care. Still, I'll watch the Oscars because I love the movies, but mostly to mock them. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. You can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com, blah, 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 that. The other thing, you know how to get in touch with me. You guys do it all the time. I'll watch the debate tonight, so you don't have to do yourself. Try and watch some of it, though. That Bernie-Elizabeth Warren exchange could be interesting. And if Elizabeth Warren doesn't make it interesting, she's pretty much on her way out the door. This will likely be her last chance to reach a wide audience and have an impact and change her trajectory in the polls. So watch it for that reason. Then you can flip on whatever you want after that happens. I suspect that'll happen pretty close to the top of the debate. Otherwise, have a great Tuesday. I'll see you on Wednesday.